Okay, let's move to communications items. I understand we have four that want to come up together, the first four, so why don't you read those together?
Item 175, request of Pairu Wan to address council regarding ERCO diversity and civic leadership program survey results. 176, request of Oleg Kubrakov to address council regarding ERCO diversity and civic leadership program survey results. 177, request of Gudeta Wakwoya to address council regarding ERCO diversity and civic leadership program survey results. And 178, request of Joe Enlett to address council regarding ERCO diversity and civic leadership program survey results.
Good morning, and we're looking forward to hearing your report. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm Pairu Wan. I'm from ERCO. And first, a side note that, you know, actually this, we're representing ERCO's Diverse and Civic Leadership Program. This Saturday, we're going to have a kickoff meeting and actually working with Bureau of, you know, Emergency Management and, you know, preparedness with both city and county, actually. Mm. It's very important topic, and thank you for, you know, talking about this this morning. And ERCO Diversity and Civic Leadership Program, thanks to the funding from the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, you know, is to work to develop immigrant and refugee community leaders to become effective, you know, to become effectively civic engaged. And we've been trained more than 150 members, leaders, that for the past 6 years. And, you know, and then throughout the years that we feel like there's no good baseline data in terms of how the immigrants and refugees are involved, civically involved. And that's why we want to do this research. The goal of this research, you know, first is understand and document the ways that the New Portlanders have been participating in the civic life, and also build engaged leaders to really document the status and also use the data to advocate for themselves. And also the third is to educate government and then have a conversation about how we can really help immigrants and refugee communities to be more involved in the civic life. And then, so today we will have four people to present the data, and this survey is a community-based participatory research. It means that the leaders that involved from the beginning till the end. And then if you look at the back page, we have the handout, the back page mm-hmm. of the cover is that blue, little cute blue tab there. You can see how many people, the whole research team actually has a lot of leaders from various communities. Those four communities are the main communities ERCO serve: Slavic, Pacific Islander, African, and Asian. Mm. And the survey instrument, you know, was adapted from a national survey, so you will see some comparison from the local data and national data. And it has three major indicators: civic indicators, electoral indicators, and political indicators. And there are some, also ERCO Engage program added some questions because of our local interest. For example, we ask people, you know, whether they serve on government board, whether they attend community forums of that sort. And 15 community leaders collected a total of 255 surveys and from 27 different cultural backgrounds. And I will leave the rest to the, I will leave the rest of the report, you know, to the rest of the team. Next is Oleg.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Oleg Kubrakov, and I'm from ERCO, and I represent Slavic community. I'm going to present civic indicators results. Please open the page 3 with the green tab. Mm-hmm. The civic indicators include work with the other people to solve problems in the community, volunteering, and fundraising. In the table, you can see 5 questions of the civic indicators. You can see that the survey participants are very active in many civic activities. For example, number 2, when we ask people if they volunteer in non-electoral organizations, 77% of them were volunteering compared to 22% of national data. Mm-hmm. Only question number 4, participation on run, walk, ride for fundraising, the data is lower than national data because they are not common in their home countries. Mm. I will share example from the Slavic community. There are 150,000 Slavic communities in the Portland metro area, and most of them came to United States of America because of their religion reasons. 80% of the Slavic community were involved in the churches. They volunteering at the church 7 days a week. We volunteer because of our devotion to the faith, because Bible said we have to help each other, because church is our family where we can rejoice, cry, and laugh together. The people we interviewed, we asked them about the places where they volunteer. And most of them volunteer at their churches. Only a few people volunteer outside of the churches. The Slavic community bring their culture here, and it's a very closed community. In the church, we speak in our language, and we practice our culture. Another reason that the Slavic doesn't volunteer for the government or outside organization is that they are totally distrust the government. Because back in my country, government all the time promise a lot of things, but almost never did what they promised. And all this experience, the leaders and church leaders bring all this experience to the United States of America. Thank you. Next will be good data, and he will present a good data for you.
Okay. Good morning, everybody, again.
Morning.
My name is, like you mentioned, Good Data. Exactly. Good Data Wakoya. I also work with IRCO at Africa House. During this survey, I represented the Oromo community, which is one tribe from the east part of Africa. I'm covering the electoral activities of the immigrant and refugee communities. Under this topic, that means it covers, this topic includes about if our volunteers, how much they are involved in the voting process, or how, if they are doing the or influencing others to vote, or also if they are volunteering to political campaigns. Please, if you turn to page number 8, yellow tag, you can see the data which I'm going to talk about. According to this data, we can see up and downs when we compare to the national data. For example, the number one says how many, what part of how many people from this immigrant and refugee communities are registered to vote. We'll see only 31% of those immigrant refugees are registered, compared to 78%, which is from national data. But one interesting thing, the next number two, number two, which says is how many of those people are voted out of the 31% who registered. It shows that 95% of those population are willing or dedicated or committed to vote. This shows that if our people, those immigrants and refugees, make to the point where they can register, they are dedicated or they are committed to vote. But the problem is most of those immigrant and refugee communities cannot make to the registration point, therefore several reasons. Most of the reasons is common for entire community, for entire immigrant refugee communities from every corner of the country. But still there are also differences. They do have also their own issue why they're not totally participate in any governmental issues. For example, some of them, especially most of them, are not involved in the government issues because of they are not citizens. Especially this is true for Pacific Islanders when we compare the data. And the others are do not involve because of they have limited or no information at all. How to vote, and where to go. They have no clue. That's why they're not involved. This is, again, true for mainly for African immigrants and refugees. The other one is lack of trust in government. Lack of trust. This, again, cited from survey which came from mainly from Slavic and as well as African communities. when we talk about trust issue, why those people have trust issue? Why they are lacking trust in the government? To make this thing clear, I would like to share my own experience. Probably this might help us understand why those people are really having this issue. When I was back home in my homeland, when my original place, which was Ethiopia, I was a teacher. And then there was a time when, this was back in 1980s, the government decided to change and amend the constitution, the whole constitution at all. And then when they did that, what happened was they decided to reach out to all citizens in the entire country. For that reason, since they have the limited power, they recruited all governmental and non-governmental employees to go out, to do the outreach and educate the people about the constitution, about the new constitution, so they can vote or endorse the constitution. Supposedly, it's supposed to be endorsed by the population before it acts or before it becomes functional. And then we did that. I took a part to educate one zone, which in my local area where I was working. And I went there. I spent about 3 days to educate those people. That means, imagine, I have to stop teaching at that time, wasting money, my time, and the time of the population also. I spent 3 days at that place. On the fourth day, the election came, and then the people came to vote. The good thing is there was a box, two boxes. One says, I approve. The other one says, disapprove. I don't agree. And then it was covered areas. They have a right to choose whichever they want. What happened was, I was lucky enough to get most of them were rebel, not to show up at all, but I was lucky to get 270 people who showed up to vote on that day. Out of 270 people, only three of them said, okay, I agree with this amendment. 267 said, no, we don't like it. Actually, we don't want it. And then I was kind of worried because when I come back with that report, probably the government might interpret it differently. Anyway, I had no choice. I came up with that report. I gave it to the local committee. This local committee took it. Imagine, in my witness, I was there, and then they finalized the report from all areas. This is, I'm giving my own example, but it happened to everyone, all of my workers who did the outreach. It was the same figure. They got the same number. Some of them, even they didn't get any number, which approved anyway. So when we come back, what happened was they finalized the report. The report, when they gave us back, they never even, like, say, they didn't even say something, okay, this is why we did this. They didn't explain. They gave me back the report to read. The report was saying totally reversed. In my zone, which I worked for, they said 267 approved and three were disapproved. I had no say. I had to keep quiet. Imagine, wasting my time. Not only my time, imagine the entire country. Wasted time, money, and all those things. After that happened, even at the national data, at the federal level, they come, the final survey became, they say 99.9% people of the country approved the amendment. That was totally, absolutely wrong. We knew that. That was obvious. But we had no right to say anything. We had to keep quiet. Imagine we came with, from those immigrant refugees come from this kind of background. So there is no way for those people to trust the government from that experience. That means they are carrying that kind of experience with them. They came here with that. So even though we see a lot of improvements and progresses here and there, still we have way to go to disengage those people from that kind of experience and be assimilated or become used to the new homeland, with their homeland, which is United States system. Thank you again.
Thank you. Great to hear that story. Sad to hear that story, but we see the challenge that you face in convincing people that elections are legal here and that the results are real. So thank you.
Good morning. My name is Joe Enlett. I am from Chuuk, from the islands of Micronesia, the Pacific Islander community. In terms of the political voice indicators, this is referring to active involvement in political issues outside of the electoral process, which covers a number of things. We had some results and basically echoes the same things that my colleagues have stated. Mostly people are involved in non-government forums and non-government organizations and events. As you can see, 46% compared to 13% on page 12. Sorry, I didn't say that. On page 12, 13% attended government-sponsored forums. And compared to the national data, again, our numbers are a little lower than the national data, as in number 7, boycotting and signing written petitions. Number 6 indicates. However, among the different immigrant groups as well, there are a lot of differences. Asian communities have a higher participation in political involvement than the rest. Speaking as a Pacific Islander, the biggest barrier for us in not being involved is not being citizens. So we are immigrants, and we come with I-90 with our I-9 statuses. And but the problem is, many of these people think that because they don't vote, because they are not registered to vote, they cannot be involved in any kind of political involvement, such as advocating for their issues and being more involved in civic engagements. However, I would like to say that in the Micronesian community, we just had our very first, in any state in the U.S., legislative day for Micronesians down in Salem last Friday. So I think I just wanted to point out that we are making some progressive steps forward. And in concluding, I would like to say that our survey was limited. Didn't cover everything, but it is a snapshot into our communities. And though very small, it is a significant step in understanding more the situation for immigrants and refugees here in Portland. And for further reading, there's a page in the back. It is a reflection from one of the leaders who was involved in this survey. You can read that also and kind of give you a better picture into the mindset of the immigrant leaders. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you all. Great questions for this panel?
I just have one. Thank you so much for this report and for all of your work with the Immigrant and Refugee Community Organization. Dr. Wan, I just have one question. And when it says the national data, is that national of all demographics or national for immigrant refugee communities?
All demographic.
What's it say?
All demographics.
All demographics.
Yeah, so not just immigrants and refugees.
That's a baseline across all groups.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Other questions?
It would be interesting to see how it compares with Portland, because I know that the Portland demographic tends to do more civic engagement and volunteering. So that, but I greatly appreciate and also that it's broken out into the different major immigrant communities. Being an immigrant myself, this is very dear to my heart. Thank you very much for presenting.
I assume this is the first time you've done this survey?
Yes.
Yeah, I hope not the last. I mean, it would be, you know, if it were repeated in a couple of years, you know, using at least maybe the same or a similar methodology, hopefully we'd see progress, you know, towards your goals. But it's just fascinating data. I mean, I don't know if it's been done elsewhere in the country, but fascinating data. It shows both the health of these communities in terms of engagement in their own cultures, but also the distance that we still have to go to get them engaged in political and community life. I think it's really, I hope, obviously you probably shared it with state legislators and the Secretary of State, for example, when you think about voter registration and making that easy for people. You know, there are a lot of other folks besides the city council who could perhaps help engage people in each of these ways that you've documented. Other comments? Thank you very much. Great piece of work.
Thank you. Thanks to ERCO for hosting our transportation forum last night.
Yes, it was a success. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Okay, well, we have another communication item now.
Yes, 179, request of Joe Walsh to address council regarding opportunity to end homelessness.
Morning, Joe.
Good morning. My name is Joe Walsh. I represent Individuals for Justice. I gave you a packet, and I would ask you to go to the last page, which is the national grade on homelessness. I would point out on that chart to If you go to the last page, you'll see the grade for the United States. 9 out of the 11 categories, we remain the same or actually we're lower. So we're failing. Mm-hmm. Affordability on a national level, we get an F. And we get an F here in Portland. I think we all know that it is extremely difficult, even with vouchers, to find a place to live. We had people that were outside this building for a year and a half that their income was over $2,000 a month, but they couldn't get an apartment because one of the people involved had an arrest record. 70 to 80% of the homeless are arrested in the cities throughout the United States. I would like to present to you Individuals for Justice report card to the city of Portland. You got an F all across the board. Your answer to homeless is the sweeps, and you're about to do another one if you haven't done it. What happens in the sweeps is the police come in after notifying people, and there's some discrepancy about how long they get notified. According to the people that are involved in this, it is a lot less time than the police department says it is. The police come in and they take everything, everything. They take their blankets, they take their gloves, they take their hats, they take their blankets, they take their sleeping bag, they take their tarp, and they put them in storage. And then they tell them they have places that they can go, and they give them a list of places. Well, if you try to get into any of those places on that list, it would take you 5 to 6 weeks, and you would also have to have a medical card clearing you for a number of things, which makes sense on some level. I gave it in the package, in the first couple of pages, you will see some innovative, creative ways of doing stuff. Utah, which is a Republican state, a right-wing Mormon state, is resolving the issue of homelessness. And how are they doing it? They're giving people apartments. And you know why? Because they did the math. And they figured out it's $16,000 a year to keep somebody on the street. If you take them to the emergency rooms and you lock them up and you give them services, it costs you $16,000 a year. They did the math for you. It's $11,000 to get them into an apartment. They said $5,000 savings. Duh! That's what they're doing. They're looking around and they're putting people in apartments. San Jose is doing a creative thing. When I first read about it, I just... Wait a minute. And it's in your package. Mm-hmm. They're putting homeless people in motels. And they're putting them in motels that prostitutes normally use. So they're creating two possible solutions. If there are no motel rooms available, there's no prostitution in that area. I don't think it's going to stop prostitution. We've been trying to do that for 20,000 years. Hasn't worked. I'm saying to you, I know, but you gave the other people 4 or 5 minutes. Give me about 30 seconds. We've come to you year after year, and we beg you to do a number of simple things. You don't need $1.7 million, Commissioner, to solve some of the problems. The people need the way to store their stuff. That is a simple solution. Just think about that. If you're homeless and you have a whole bunch of stuff with you and you got to go from point A to point B, it's a hassle, a huge hassle. I know. I have to take my oxygen everywhere I go. We ask for that. You did nothing. We asked you to turn around and look for buildings, and you haven't done that. You spent 4 months working with 70 people when you have 3,000 people on the streets. It's mind-boggling the way you think. I don't know how you think. But you're not solving the solutions.
So you need to wrap up.
So we'll be back here again, and we will stay on your butts until you solve this problem. And here are the answers. And tonight, I think that Michael is presenting to St. John's the possibility of ECHO buildings and trying to get the associations involved.
Good.
That's another creative thing. Fix this. This, you cannot go to sleep over. And Friday, we will have a memorial for a person that you walked by for 2 years who died from first having frost bite on his feet, and it took him down, and he's dead. And he was my friend. Name was Hay C, in case you don't know it. Spent 2 years out there.
Thanks, Joe. Okay.